The Academy of Music sat on Broadway like a gilded tooth, all carved cornices and fluted columns, the kind of building that made a woman in a wool coat feel suddenly aware of every threadbare seam. Pearl stood on the sidewalk and looked up at the marquee, where the gas jets flickered behind frosted glass panels. Tonight was a charity matinee for the Orphanage Aid Society. The program listed a soprano from Milan and a pianist who had studied under Liszt. Pearl had bought her ticket with coins from her coat pocket, counting them out on the corner because she could not afford to lose one. She was not here for the music. She was here because Alina Rossi had mentioned, 3 days ago in the cramped basement shop with the smell of boiled cabbage rising from the stove, that Pearl's father used to attend these performances. Once a month. Always the same seat. Third row, center aisle seat, so he could slip out without disturbing anyone. Alina had said this with a shrug, folding a hem with quick, nervous fingers, but the detail lodged in Pearl's mind like a burr. Her father had been a man who hated charity galas, who called them theft with string quartets. And yet he had sat in the third row of the Academy of Music every month for 2 years. Pearl pushed through the heavy oak doors and stepped into the lobby. The air changed immediately warm, thick with the scent of perfume and floor wax and the faint metallic tang of the gas chandeliers overhead. People flowed around her in ribbons of silk and velvet, men in tails and women in corseted gowns, all of them moving with the practiced ease of people who belonged somewhere. Pearl felt the weight of her coat, the roughness of it, the way it absorbed the damp from the street and held it close to her skin like a second layer of grief. She kept her hat pulled low and her hands in her pockets, feeling the brass scissors against her thigh. The usher was a young man with a stiff collar and a clipboard. He stopped in front of her, his mouth opening and closing like a fish, taking in her coat, her boots, the lack of gloves. "Program," he said. Pearl reached into her pocket and produced the folded slip of paper. He took it with two fingers, as though it might be contaminated, and scanned the printed name. His eyes flicked up to her face and then away again, settling on her shoulder. "Third floor gallery," he said, already turning away. Pearl looked past him to the grand staircase sweeping upward, the balustrade carved with acanthus leaves, the crystal chandeliers casting prismatic shards across the marble. Third floor gallery, the cheapest seats, the place where the poor sat to pretend they were part of something beautiful. She took the stairs two at a time, her boots making no sound on the carpet runner, her breath coming in controlled pulls. By the time she reached the third floor, her ribs ached. The gallery was a narrow balcony overlooking the orchestra pit, separated from the rest of the audience by a thin wooden railing painted to look like wrought iron. A handful of people sat scattered along the benches, old women with shawls pinned tight, a man reading a newspaper with the headline about the Panama Canal negotiations, a child sleeping against his mother's shoulder. Pearl chose a seat near the back, close to the wall, where she could see the third row below without being seen herself. She pulled her coat tighter and watched the empty seats ahead. Third row, center, aisle seat. She counted them. 1, 2, 3. The aisle seat was empty. It would always be empty. Her father was dead. The lights dimmed. A murmur rose from the audience, polite and anticipatory. Pearl leaned forward, her elbows on her knees, her chin resting on her fists. She studied the empty seat the way she studied a crime scene, looking for traces, for evidence of what had been there before absence took over. There was nothing, just polished wood and a cushion slightly indented from the previous performance. The soprano sang. Her voice was bright and clear, the kind of purity that made Pearl's teeth ache. She sang about love and loss and the constancy of stars, and Pearl listened with half an ear, her attention split between the melody and the seat below her. Something was wrong. She could not name it, but the geometry of the space felt altered, as though the room had shifted on its axis while she was climbing the stairs. She straightened, scanned the third row. The aisle seat was still empty, but the cushion, she had been wrong about the indentation. It was not from the previous performance. It was fresh. Someone had been sitting there recently, minutes ago. Hours, the wool of the cushion was compressed, the fibers still recovering their shape. Pearl's pulse ticked up, a slow, deliberate climb. She reached into her pocket and closed her fingers around the brass scissors. Cold metal, familiar weight. She let her hand drop back to her knee. The pianist began an interlude, his fingers moving across the keys in a cascade of arpeggios. Pearl watched the third row. Nothing. The lobby below, visible through the arched opening on her left, was quiet now the patrons had filed into the auditorium, leaving the space empty and echoing. She could see the usher standing by the ticket booth, his clipboard pressed against his chest, his head tilted as though listening to something. Then the lights went out. Not a gradual dimming, not the slow fade of gas valves being turned. The lights died all at once, as though someone had reached up and snapped the gas supply at the main valve. The soprano's voice cut off mid-note. The pianist's hands froze on the keys. A collective gasp rose from the audience, sharp and sudden, and then silence thick, absolute, and wrong. Pearl did not move. She sat perfectly still, her ears straining against the dark. The gas chandeliers were dead. The emergency candles along the walls had not been lit. Someone had done this deliberately. Someone had gone to the gas main and shut it off, and they were still inside the building. She felt the shift in the air before she heard anything else a pressure change, the subtle displacement of bodies moving through the space. The audience was murmuring now, uncertain, shifting on their benches. A woman whispered, "Is someone there?" A man coughed. The usher called out, "Remain calm, remain in your seats." Pearl stood, slowly. Her boots made no sound on the carpet. She moved along the back wall, keeping to the shadow, her hand still closed around the brass scissors. Her fingers found the rough plaster of the wall and followed it downward, searching for the stairwell that led to the orchestra level. She found the edge of the stairs and descended, one step at a time, her body pressed against the wall, her breath shallow. Third floor, second floor, first floor. The lobby was dark now, the gas lamps extinguished, the crystal chandeliers casting nothing but a faint gray luminescence from the streetlights beyond the windows. Pearl moved through the darkness like a thought, her senses sharpened to a razor's edge. She could hear breathing hers, the audience's, and something else, something that did not belong. She reached the edge of the grand staircase and looked down. The main hall was a cavern of shadow. The audience was still seated, still murmuring, still waiting for the lights to come back on. But Pearl saw it now, the figure standing at the edge of the orchestra pit, motionless, facing the stage. Tall, broad-shouldered, the man in gray coat. Her breath stopped. She knew that coat. She had seen it in the subway tunnels, in the alley behind the precinct, in the periphery of her vision when she turned too quickly. The man in gray coat. He was here. He was inside the building, and he was not looking at the audience. He was looking at the third row, at the empty seat. Pearl moved forward, quietly. Her boots made no sound on the marble. She was halfway down the staircase when he turned. He turned slowly, deliberately, the way a predator turns when it knows prey is watching and wants it to know. His face was flat and featureless in the darkness, his eyes catching the faint light from the windows like wet stone. He wore gloves. Thick leather gloves, the kind a laborer might wear, the kind no one wore indoors in November unless they were preparing to touch something they did not want to leave fingerprints on. He saw her, of course he saw her, he had been waiting. Pearl did not run. She had learned that much from her father. Running made you visible, made you loud, made you a target. Instead, she stopped. She stood on the third step of the grand staircase, her hand still in her pocket around the brass scissors, and she looked at him. He tilted his head, a fraction of a second, an acknowledgement, then he moved. Not toward her, past her. Down the stairs, into the orchestra pit, his gray coat flowing behind him like smoke. Pearl followed. She had no choice. The question was no longer whether she wanted to pursue him, it was whether she could survive the answer. The orchestra pit was a sunken space beneath the stage, accessible by a narrow flight of metal stairs. Pearl descended quickly, her boots ringing against the iron, her breath coming in short bursts. The air down here smelled of rosin and sawdust and something sharper oil, perhaps, or chemicals used in the rigging of the stage curtains. She could hear movement ahead of her, the soft scrape of leather on metal, the whisper of fabric against wood. "You shouldn't be here," he said. His voice was flat, detached, the way a mechanic describes a broken engine. He tapped the lockbox once with a gloved knuckle, a final, decisive sound. "This is not your work." He was crouching now, his gloved hands working at something on the floor of the pit. Pearl could not see what it was. The darkness was too thick, her eyes too unaccustomed to the absence of light. But she could hear him, the soft, precise movements of fingers manipulating an object, the occasional click of metal against wood. "I'm not here for your work," she said finally. Her voice sounded strange to her, low, steady, almost calm. "I'm here for what's underneath it." The man in gray coat stopped. He did not turn. He simply raised his right hand, palm outward, and held it there. A gesture, a warning. Pearl froze. Her heart hammered against her ribs, a frantic bird trapped in a cage. She looked at his hand. The glove was dark leather, scuffed at the knuckles, the fingers long and steady. She looked at the object. He was working on a small wooden box, perhaps, or a mechanism, something that clicked softly with each adjustment of his fingers. "You shouldn't be here," he said. His voice was flat, detached, the way a mechanic describes a broken engine. "This isn't your performance." Pearl said nothing. She kept her hand in her pocket, her fingers curled around the brass scissors. She was calculating distance, angles, escape routes. The metal stairs were behind her. The stage was above her. The only exit was the corridor to her left, leading back toward the lobby. She spoke at last, the words low and steady, carrying a timbre that felt alien to her own ears. "I'm not here for the performance," she said. "I'm here for the intermission." The man in gray coat did not respond. He continued working at the object, his movements precise, unhurried. Pearl took a step forward, then another. She was 10 feet away. 5. The smell of oil was stronger now, mixed with something else, something metallic and sharp, like copper pennies held in a sweaty palm. 3 feet. She could see the object clearly now. It was a small lockbox, the kind used for jewelry or letters, made of dark wood with brass fittings. The lid was open. Inside, wrapped in wax paper, was a silk knot. 3 crossings. A hidden loop, the same knot from her father's pocket. Her breath caught. She reached for the box. The man in gray coat moved faster than she expected. His gloved hand shot out, not toward her, but toward the stage above. He struck a lever, a rope, a mechanism. Pearl heard the groan of wood and the snap of cable, and then the stage curtain began to fall. It came down fast, a wall of heavy velvet descending from the flies, filling the space between them. Pearl threw herself backward, rolling across the pit floor, her shoulder hitting the metal stairs hard enough to knock the breath from her lungs. The curtain crashed down behind her, sealing the pit in darkness. She scrambled to her feet. Her shoulder screamed. Her vision swam, but she was alive. She was moving. She ran for the corridor, her boots slipping on the sawdust-strewn floor, her hand finding the wall for guidance. She burst into the corridor, her breath ragged, her coat torn at the shoulder from where the curtain had caught her. The corridor was empty. The lobby beyond was still dark, still filled with murmuring voices. Pearl ran. She did not look back. She did not slow down. She ran through the lobby, past the ticket booth, past the grand staircase, and out through the oak doors into the street. The cold had settled again. It pressed against her skin, damp and insistent, soaking through her coat in seconds. Pearl stood on the sidewalk and looked back at the Academy of Music. The marquee still glowed faintly behind the frosted glass. The gas jets still flickered. The building still stood. But the man in gray coat was gone. And the silk knot was gone. And Pearl Casey was standing in the rain with nothing but a torn coat and a shoulder that throbbed with every heartbeat. She touched her pocket. The brass scissors were still there. The vial was still there. The coins were still there. Everything she had carried into the building was still in her possession. Everything except the truth. The fog swallowed the street lamp's glow, leaving only the distant, rhythmic thrum of the river against the wharves. Pearl adjusted her collar against the chill and walked on, her heels striking the pavement with a steady, solitary cadence that marked her path into the unknown.